Happy Monday, Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch. This is Golf Today. And you think about Rory's 2025 Pebble. He felt like he hadn't had an iconic golf course victory. He gets it. Then he wins the most important event on the PGA Tour, the Players. Completes the career Grand Slam. Has a wonderful week at Royal Portrush. And now victory at the Irish Open for a second time.
Yeah, second Irish Open victory at the K Club, actually. And second time, a dramatic eagle on the 18th hole, propelling him there. You know, my sister actually went to the tournament yesterday. It's the first golf event she's ever attended in her life. Thought it was one of the best sporting days she's ever had. I'm not quite sure how to break it to her that they're not actually all like this. Even for Rory McIlroy, they're not all like this.
He's provided a lot of magical Sundays this season. Rory, now, as you mentioned, a two-time winner of the Irish Open. His other win coming in 2016 at the K Club. Rory is now the 12th player with 20 or more DP World Tour wins. Here is Rory after the win.
Yeah, look, I feel just so lucky that I get to do this. I get to do this in front of these people. The support has been absolutely amazing all week. And I thought it was going to be a nice homecoming, obviously coming home with a green jacket and all that, but this has been absolutely incredible. This has exceeded all of my expectations, and just so happy I could play the way I did this week for all of them and get the win.
Didn't get this at Augusta, did you?
No, I didn't. This is hopefully be getting a bit of it in a few weeks' time at the Ryder Cup. But it's absolutely incredible. I love coming home. I love playing in this atmosphere. And these are, moments like these are the things you're going to remember, well after your career's over. And this is a really special day. I feel very fortunate because there's probably very few golfers in the world that get the support that I get when I go home. Maybe John Rahm in Spain. There's maybe a few others, but this is absolutely incredible. I don't take it for granted. I feel very grateful and very lucky that I get to do this, and can't wait to celebrate tonight.
And what a year for Rory McIlroy. You look at his worldwide wins, as you mentioned, Pebble Beach, winning that signature event, felt his resume was kind of bereft that iconic golf course victory. Then, of course, two wins now at the Players, and the one that he was waiting for, the golf world was waiting for, the sixth man to complete the career Grand Slam, winning at Augusta National. And then Sunday, you're thinking maybe he's a little tired this time of year. You got to kind of put the batteries down and recharge him for the Ryder Cup. No, he wins the Irish Open for a second time. What a dream season, Eamon Lynch, for a player who's been pulled in so many different directions for his entire life. He has come home. He has had another goosebumps victory in a season I imagine he will never forget.
And it's really interesting watching both Rory's reaction to the fans and the fans' reaction to Rory, because that relationship has kind of grown into a comfort zone. It wasn't always that way. Rory wasn't always comfortable playing in front of home fans because of the kind of tortured history of Ireland and Northern Ireland and this whole kind of competing claims on Rory's identity over the years. It wasn't always the easiest environment for him to play in. Now it is, and I think that all changed on that Friday at Portrush back in 2019 when he was in that epic battle to make the cut and the fans were behind him. But I also think what you saw yesterday, you compare that to what we had a year ago. He needed an eagle on the last hole at Royal County Down to force a playoff in the Irish Open with Rasmus Højgaard. It slid by the hole. There was a sense that these are the moments that happened to Rory McIlroy, that a little too often it just slides by on the wrong side. To me, it feels now as though this game can't actually hurt him anymore. He took all the gut punches you could get between the Open at St. Andrews, the Open at Pinehurst last year. Now, that green jacket's almost like a coat of armour for him, because events like this don't actually define Rory McIlroy's career anymore. It's great as it is that he wins a home Open. It's not even going to define his season anymore. Everything's kind of gravy for Rory McIlroy at this point, and I think that's why you see a certain amount of just comfort and relaxation. He didn't look as stressed this time around as he has in those situations, even in regular tour events in the recent past.
It looked like pure, unadulterated joy, almost like childlike joy for Rory McIlroy. And when I spoke to him when he turned 30, and he told me he thought his 30s could be better than his 20s, I thought he was crazy quietly. I just thought it would be too difficult to match what he did. And he may not match the number of major championships. He might. You know, he might double four and maybe end up with eight. But to complete the career Grand Slam in the way that he did, the convulsing that he did on that 18th green, and then to also add a Players' Championship and Pebble, and to have the homecoming that he had at Royal Portrush. I know he finished tied for seventh, but that was a love fest that week in County Antrim, watching him walk those fairways as a Masters champion, kind of able to exhale and celebrate, and then to go back this past week and have another goosebumps moment. We're hearing things that you just don't hear in golf, maybe outside of a Ryder Cup. He has experienced things in 2025 that how many people have experienced on a golf course? Maybe Jack in 86 at the Masters, Tiger 2019. I mean, these are singular, special accomplishments and achievements and life experiences that Rory McIlroy is having.
And one thing we're not seeing now that we also saw earlier this year was that kind of slump that came after the Masters, where he actually talked openly about the difficulty on seeing where's the next mountaintop to climb and trying to find some motivation, which is understandable when you've accomplished a childhood dream that started 30 years earlier. What do you look at next? And I think we got the answer to that last week, because he talked about a conversation he'd had with his caddy, Harry Diamond, when Harry said to him, you know, mate, it's great you got your career Grand Slam. I don't have mine yet. Which is exactly the kind of thing that Harry Diamond knows to say to Rory McIlroy, yeah. Because it's suddenly Harry's just pointed him to the next mountaintop. And their relationship is that close. And we saw that immediately after the Masters as well, that getting the wins for somebody else is actually something that will actually motivate Rory McIlroy now, rather than just the pursuit of his own excellence that we've seen for 30 years.
He's getting everything he wants in 2025, though you know he wants one more big thing in a couple weeks
does, and as Damon says, only a couple more weeks to wait. The Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black is upon us, and both teams are actually having final warm-ups. The Europeans at Wentworth, the Americans in Napa. Not everyone is playing, though. More on that coming up.
And we're back on golf today. Another look at Rory McIlroy's win on Sunday at the K Club. Made a dramatic eagle on the 72nd hole of the Amgen Irish Open to force a playoff with Joachim Lagergren. He'd go on to win on the third playoff hole for his fourth worldwide victory this year. Man, look at those scenes. Now, Rory not done yet. Let's take a look at what's happening this week as the Rolex Series returns. We'll see Rory in action again as he headlines the field at the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth as he and his Ryder Cup teammates get set for Bethpage Black. Coverage begins Thursday on Golf Channel.
And it's basically training camp for both Ryder Cup teams this week. 11 of the 12 European members are in the field at Wentworth. 10 of the US team will be appearing at the Pro Course Championship at Silverado Resort in Napa, with only Bryson DeChambeau, who of course no longer plays the PGA Tour, and Xander Schauffele missing from that lineup. And with that, it's time for Golf Today Roundtable, as we welcome in two guys who don't need no stinking warm-ups. Golf Channel's senior writer, Ryan Lavner, and GolfDigest.com contributor, Shane Ryan. Ryan Lavner, I want to start with you. What we saw yesterday on the European Tour and what we're going to see this week from Wentworth does make the point that there is a lot of quality golf played outside of the US, particularly in the fourth quarter of the year. We do have a strong field in Napa this week. It's probably the last time this year we're going to see strong fields on either side of the Atlantic. Is there an argument that the PGA Tour ought to be partnering better to serve golf fans better in the fourth quarter of the year, even if that does involve working outside of the United States with other partners?
Absolutely. I think it's actually the perfect time to be experimenting, because you look at the fall portion of the PGA Tour schedule. As you mentioned, it's certainly light on star power. The on-site experiences and anything that's going to be wowing spectators. Obviously, it's a really hard sell competing directly against football. And the new CEO of the PGA Tour, Brian Rolapp, is going to know that better than anyone. You look at what the potential TV windows could be then if you start to incorporate more of those national opens, whether it's the Irish Open, maybe you're including the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, the Dunhill Links. Any of those tournaments would probably be ending right around, you know, noon or 1 o'clock Eastern time, then feeding directly into football. I think you saw at the Irish Open in particular what one star player can really do to elevate those tournaments. It's not going to take, you know, the entirety of the top 10 in the world rankings. A player like Rory or a Scotty or a Jordan Spieth and a Justin Thomas, they can almost single-handedly boost the event just by their mere presence. It's not going to take much, but I think it's a great opportunity for the PGA Tour to finally look beyond its borders in the fall.
You know, Shane Amon mentioned the Ryder Cup team building events this week in London and in Napa. If you're Keegan Bradley, how do you handle Bryson DeChambeau? Is it just dinner, you know, at the French Laundry with the guys? Do you invite him on property? Can he do some bench pressing in the PGA Tour workout trailer? Like, how do you handle Bryson this week if you're Keegan Bradley?
Yeah, I think those guys all are sort of fine with Bryson. Every year we're like, oh, are Bryson and Brooks going to get along? Or how are they going to do it? Yeah, obviously he can't play in the field, but I think it'll be easy for them. I think he'll go to dinner with them. He will, you know, he'll socialize as much as he has to, and then he'll go back to chipping ping pong balls into a solo cup or whatever it is he does for content now. I think everybody's going to be just fine, and they'll be completely ready to go. Although, I mean, if you guys are interested in pushing, you know, a dramatic sort of like, you know, nobody can get along with Bryson, I'm here for that because the news cycle is kind of slow right now. But my real answer is I think it'll be probably pretty simple and easy.
Well, sticking on the theory of polarizing figures on the Ryder Cup here, Shane, Donald Trump went to the U.S. Open tennis final yesterday. It caused a logistical nightmare in terms of security lines, paying customers were outside long after the action started. He's been invited to Friday at the Ryder Cup by the PGA of America. Should what happened yesterday be a red flag to the PGA in terms of the logistics and making sure they get on top of that? Because people did pay a lot of money to show up at Bethpage.
Yeah, I was going to say, now for your money, you get a full pat down from the Secret Service. It's part of the package. Along with the $800, you get, you know, attendance, you get some beers, and you also get the full treatment from those guys. No, I mean, I think obviously, you know, at the start of that Sinner-Alcaraz match, I watched it yesterday, and I think the stands were kind of empty for part of the first set. And so we already know what a crush it is. We've been there in the mornings at the Ryder Cup to get in. So if you throw that element in, definitely they will logistically want to be very much on top of it because it is going to slow things down. It seems to me like a golf course with 50,000 people would be a nightmare if you're Secret Service. I don't know. I've never done that job, but it seems like a dangerous sort of place to have a public figure like that. So I have to imagine they're going to, you know, dot all their I's and cross all their T's. So they're going to have to figure it out. Yeah, because people will be very upset if they paid all that money and they get in at 1 p.m. instead of 6 a.m. or whatever they line up.
Lav, speaking of the Ryder Cup, look what we've seen in professional golf over the last month with Justin Rose getting victory in Memphis, Tommy Fleetwood winning the FedEx Cup, Rory yesterday in Ireland, Robert McIntyre playing great golf. I feel like Europe should be the favorite at Bethpage Black. I know the home and home thing of the last decade might tell us something else, but do you think Europe has done enough in the last month to maybe tip the scales that they should be the favorite going into Long Island?
Well, I think that this was played on a neutral playing field, so to speak, where it's 50-50 fan support. If the home team wasn't necessarily dictating golf course setup, I think you can make a very strong argument that this is certainly the best European team and certainly has the deepest roster, 1 through 12. They've certainly closed the talent gap over this past decade in particular. But again, you know, we're talking about can Europe stage an upset here? We are discounting just how significant of an impact that actually is for the home team. You look at the last five cups, it has been decided by the home team by an average of 6.6 points. It is the single biggest determiner of success in the modern Ryder Cup. I think it's going to be a great indication this year if somehow the Americans blow out the Europeans. And I think all four of us would agree that that is unlikely to be the case. But if they happen to do so, I think it's time to take a serious look at whether the golf course home course advantage has gone too far, because this should be a very close, very competitive Ryder Cup, even on American soil.
Ryan, staking on this team competition, it was Christmas come early for the design geeks over the weekend with the Walker Cup at Cypress Point Club. But was that an acknowledgement that the greatest venues that we all want to see are probably better suited to match play in the amateur game than the idea of having those become a regular feature of men's professional golf, where they're much more likely to be overpowered?
I don't know. I don't know if you should lump them all in one category. I think every golf course should be sort of viewed differently. Certainly Cypress Point lends itself to match play. I think Pebble Beach over time has proven that with the U.S. Amateur as well, which was great when Victor Hovland won a couple of years ago. I do think, though, that the Walker Cup at Cypress was an indication of just how much it matters. It matters to the viewers. It matters to the spectators. It matters to the competitors. Bringing a world-class competition like the Walker Cup to golf courses like Cypress, I think, is the direction it should be going. And when you look at the direction that the USGA, the RNA, is going, some of the venues on the upcoming ROTA, whether it's from the US Amateur or the Walker Cup, like, it is the best of the best. I like that shift. And obviously, there's certain restrictions you're going to have an event of bigger stature. You can't necessarily bring a US Open to Cypress. But I do like them opening the doors to something like this, because I think it benefits everyone. It benefits the competitors, certainly, who get, I think, a little bit more amped up. And I think it matters to the competitors where they play and where they win. But to your point, I think it also, not just to the architecture geeks, I think it matters to the golf fans as well, to see these incredible world-class golf courses, some of the best in the world, on display for, you know, sort of a limited time only special.
Shane, you've written extensively about the Ryder Cup in book form, in article form, on websites. When you arrived to Long Island early in the week, what are you most looking forward to? There's been so much talk, so much preamble. What are you most looking forward to in this edition of the Ryder Cup?
Friday is the answer every year. it's the longest week. It's already long at majors when you have to wait till Thursday. When it comes to the Ryder Cup, Thursday comes and there's still no golf. And, you know, Ryan knows exactly what I'm talking about. You're just chomping at the bit. So you can't wait until Friday morning, which I think is one of the most special times of the golf season, to see, you know, to be out there at sunrise and see everybody get ready. So just that moment would be one thing I'm looking forward to. You know, the last few Ryder Cups, the anticipation, that old French phrase where the best part of the affair is walking up the steps, has been true, because within about 2 hours of the actual tournament, it's been basically over. So, you know, the anticipation on that morning is terrific. But I think, yeah, to Ryan's point, and I wrote about this recently, this is a good test case, this Ryder Cup, because Europe seems to have done everything right. You know, they have the same team as last time, genetically. They have one twin brother. Everything else is the same. And they, you know, they have a captain that they know is tried and tested and good. And as you guys talked about, I think it is likely that the U.S. will blow them out, because I'm such a home course truther that I think it's such an advantage. But if there's any team that can keep it close and make it competitive, it is this European team. So I'm looking forward to that, because I think we kind of have a true test case here. I thought maybe in Rome that would be the case with the Americans. Then they all got sick and a lot of different things happened. But here again, I think I'm anxious to see if a visiting team who does everything right has a chance to win. So I think that'll be really fun.
And now a little over 2 weeks away. Shane, thanks so much. Lab, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Time now for a DP World Tour update. Talk about a homecoming for Rory McIlroy in Ireland. He brought his green jacket over to the Irish Open, did a Q&A event with media and fans after his first round on Thursday, and definitely had a flex. All of his major championship hardware was on the stage with him as he's taking selfies with the crowd, and he certainly kept those fans entertained on Sunday. Several angles out there on social media. Drained this eagle putt on the last hole of regulation to force a playoff. Take a look at that crowd reaction from the stands, Damon.
Phones everywhere. I think I saw some spilt beer, but that's okay. I'm sure they got a refill later.
We don't ever spill it, Dan. That was caught before it hit the ground. Trust me on that. But it was an epic finish, and of course he went on to win in the third hole of sudden death.
And how about joining this list? And it's been a year of Rory joining lists. Players with 20 or more DP World Tour wins and 5 majors. Seve, Tiger, Sir Nick, and now Rory McIlroy off of that win in Ireland. And we're joined now by The Guardian's Ewan Murray. So let's ask the question. Listen, we know that Nick had 6 majors. Seve has 5. I wonder, off of Rory's 2025, is he now the greatest European golfer of all time?
Yes, but I thought that was the case when he won the Masters, to be honest. What I think is more interesting is that this is the best season of Rory McIlroy's career. He's not quite confirmed that. I think he's waiting to see what the Ryder Cup brings, and that's a big incentive for him. But I think given what he did at Augusta and all the pressure that was on that, and given what he's done around that, including Pebble Beach, Sawgrass, and now another Irish Open, I thought already he was Europe's greatest golfing expert, but I think this is already the greatest greatest season of his career.
Ewan, if you go back to last year's Irish Open, he needed an eagle on the last hole to force a playoff with Rasmus Højgaard, didn't get it. There was a period where events like this seemed to slide by Rory McIlroy with a sort of a dispiriting frequency. Do you get the impression now, after what happened at Augusta, that things like this, in a way, they can't hurt him anymore in some ways? He's been to the absolute pinnacle of the game. He took all the gut punches you could expect at Pinehurst last year. So he knows now he's not actually going to be defined by events like this, even his own National Open, and it takes a little bit of the pressure off.
I think so, but I also think it's admirable how much incentive he still has and motivation he still has to compete. I mean, that was typical Rory McIlroy theatre yesterday. He was in the tournament, he was out the tournament, back in the tournament, he gets to the 18th, it looks like he can't do it, and he holds that putt from 30 foot. Fantastic theatre, as I said. But I just admire his willingness to keep going and keep going for it. When he's achieved, as you said, everything he dreamt of achieving in the game. And I think that's, you know, a fantastic example of his mindset. I also think there's been so much conjecture and opinion about, you know, how he had to reconfigure and reset goals post-Augusta. And I think people went over the top with that. But my goodness, he's done it pretty quickly. You know, he's won again. He's been pretty competitive for a lot of the summer. And as I said, you know, the Ryder Cup now, he's done what he said he would do in terms of being ready to peak before the Ryder Cup by winning on what was his penultimate start before he gets to Bethpage.
Speaking of Bethpage, you know, there was a lot of focus on the crowd yesterday and how invested in the outcome they were, Ewan. And you know, there's nothing more Europeans love to do than complain about American crowds at the Ryder Cup and how they go overboard and how some of the things that are said aren't necessarily sporting. But there was some of that yesterday in Dublin as well.
Yeah, there's two sides to that. One, I thought the swell of support for Rory McIlroy was incredible. The scenes when he held that putt to make the playoff were unlike golf. It was more like a football crowd. You know, this is not supposed to be a tribal environment. And you showed the videos there. I thought the scenes were terrific and a very good reflection on the tournament. What was not such a good reflection, and this was obvious, were the shouts of get in the water, which Lagergren encountered, Hidalgo encountered playing the 18th. And even the widespread cheering when Lagergren hit it in the water during the playoff. Your point is the perfectly valid one. We can't be hypocritical because, you know, if we get to Bethpage and American fans are a little bit rowdy, a little bit over the top, European people will have plenty to say about that. So I think we should also take on board that maybe we're capable of that ourselves at certain tournaments.
Well, no doubt it'll be loud at Bethpage Black. But let's talk about who may win the Ryder Cup. The thought has been Europe wins at home and the Americans win at home. But considering what Rory just did and what Justin Rose did this last month, Tommy Fleetwood, Bobby McIntyre's great play, can you make a case that the Europeans, off of a 16.5, 11.5 victory 2 years ago with generally the same team, should be the favorite?
I'm not sure about that. But what I will say is I think this is their best chance since Medina. I think Hazeltine, the team had issues, wasn't very strong. Whistling Straits was a very strange Ryder Cup for reasons we all know about. I think this is a settled team. I think this team, they don't apply hierarchy, but they can only look at Rory McIlroy and be inspired. Justin Rose, as you touched on, never seems to age. Bob McIntyre is a top 10 player in the world. Tommy Fleetwood has finally broken his duck in America and is playing very, very well. I think the consistency and continuity around the European team is a big advantage. I think there are holes and weaknesses in the American team that maybe haven't been there recently. So while I wouldn't call them favourites, I think that would be a risk. I think it's definitely their best chance since Medina to win away from home. And I've said on here before, and I believe it, I think that the event would benefit from more away victories. It would help it as a sporting contest. So I think Europe is a great chance. And I think if they do it, it would overall be a benefit to the Ryder Cup.
Another big event in Europe this week, Ewan. You're going to be at the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth, the flagship event of the European Tour. How big a week is that and next Monday when the Ryder Cup team from Europe has a reconnaissance trip to Bethpage, particularly for guys like, say, John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, who are going to be on that team? They now play on live, so they don't see much of their peers and teammates anymore on a week-to-week basis. How big is the next kind of week, 8 days, for those guys to just kind of refamiliarise themselves?
Yeah, it's hugely important. And it's funny how it's changed. You know, when LIV started up, these guys back playing on the DP World Tour was big news. It was controversial. There was a lot said about it. Now no one really bothers to be playing. People shrug their shoulders. They're accepted Ram and Hatton as key parts of the Ryder Cup team. Wentworth itself is a big week. Great event. Very, very well done by the DP World Tour. So it has significance anyway. When it's just before a Ryder Cup and just before the team head for this reconnaissance mission to Bethpage, which will be very important, I think it takes on, you know, extra meaning. And so many of the players, McIlroy, Lowry, have very good records at Wentworth. It would be no shock to see one of them win before they, you know, on their final start before they go to the Ryder Cup. So there's, it's a big deal. It's always a big deal anyway, but I think given what's coming up in the next few weeks, it's amplified even further.
Ewan, the thought was that if Keegan Bradley had selected himself to play, that it would have been a complication for the American side. The Europeans talked about that quite a bit. The fact that he did not pick himself to play, do you see that as a boost potentially for the six players especially that he did choose to complete his roster?
Yeah, where I think it's probably helped the US is more in the kind of commentary and the narrative where people are portraying what Bradley did as a selfless act. You know, he stood back for the benefit of the team. I think that's where the key benefit is to the US, where the assumption is he could easily have played, he could have been self-indulgent. And I'm not sure if that's particularly fair or true. But I think Bradley and the US have almost gone one up by being seen to work for the greater good of the team against a player who would have been desperate ordinarily to play in a Ryder Cup. And also, I think what's interesting is that story about whether Bradley would play or wouldn't play became all-consuming. So, for example, the issue about the American players being paid, which ordinarily would be a big, big deal, that has disappeared because it became all about Keegan Bradley playing, not playing, putting himself first or the team first. And I think it's fascinating how the discussion and discourse changed to that end.
I just want to wrap up on a broader question here. You and the PGA Tour has this committee that Tiger is chairing that's going to re-examine how they do business, what the schedule looks like. Is there an argument to be made that based on what we saw yesterday at the Irish Open, what we're going to see this week at Wentworth with the BMW, that there is enough core golf out there that is high drama, that is enough for the PGA Tour to better partner with, say, the European Tour or the Australasian Tour later in the year and try to actually serve core golf fans better in the fourth quarter of the year by having guys compete on these better stages overseas?
Is this a global schedule point, Eamon?
Broadly speaking, yes.
Yes, to answer your question, yes. I think what Rory did yesterday, again, and he believes this anyway, it endorsed the value of national opens. The Irish Open is a big deal. The Australian Open is a big deal. And I think somehow golf in general, mainly the PGA Tour, I think the PGA Tour is guilty sometimes of being too insular, only looking inside the US. Should look more broadly at these national opens and how they can be made bigger, more important deals. And as you say, if they can work that around different points of the year where it's a bit dry on the PGA Tour itself, all the better. But you know, I think for years, unfortunately, the likes of the Irish Open, the French Open, the Australian Open, these national opens have been downplayed a little bit. And it took, you know, it's taken Rory McIlroy to say it, but also on the course to do it, to show that these are big, big tournaments that probably don't get enough respect.
Ewan, it's always great to catch up with you. Thanks for spending a few moments with us on this Monday.
Thank you.
This weekend, we got to see one of the coolest events in golf, one of the world's coolest courses. That was the Walker Cup at Cypress Point. One of the coolest cats in the game was there to cover it, and he's joining us next, the legend, Roger Mulder.
We're back on golf today. What a weekend it was on the Monterey Peninsula, Cypress Point. Took center stage for the 50th Walker Cup. 34-year-old Stuart Hagestad drained this putt on the 15th to solidify a 4-3 victory and clinch the crucial 13th point the Americans needed to retain the Walker Cup. So Team USA wins the 50th edition in a dominant single session, again beating Great Britain and Ireland 17-9. The win marks the fifth straight for the U.S. as the overall series record sits at 49-1. Roger Maltby was part of the call on Golf Channel and Peacock out at Cypress Point. Joins us now. You've played around 100 times there. from what I understand. A lot of viewers, though, hadn't seen it maybe ever, maybe in decades. What was it like to be on the ground with this special amateur event this past weekend?
Well, I can tell you this. It was spectacular. And every time I've been on the grounds of Cypress Point, it's a privilege. It really is. I just feel blessed when I'm there. It was beautifully conducted. I can say this as a far cry from your previous conversation about the Ryder Cup. Never once did I hear chants of USA, USA. Not once. It was, the galleries were well-mannered. The weather was delightful. The course is perfect, as it usually is. It was just a great week. One I'll never forget, really. Honestly, I will never forget this week. It was tremendous.
Roger, north of 100 rounds at Cypress, your reputation as a man of the people just took an enormous torpedo right there. I suppose you're going to tell us you've actually aced either 15 or 16 or both?
Okay, I have. I fess, okay? Playing a practice round for the AT&T with my amateur partner, who was Eddie DeBartolo, that owned the 49ers, and we were waiting for the group ahead, standing on the back of the tee, and you can look up the coastline to Fish Bay, and in front of you, the rocks where the sea lions and sea otters are playing, and in the distance to our left was, you could see the 16th green, and I said, this is my favorite spot in the world of golf, this particular spot. And when the green cleared, I got up and made it. Go figure. Of course, I would do it in a practice round, right?
Well, that's a bar bill. I think everyone would be happy to pay after that, Ace. I'm curious how much you think the venue matters in events like this, Roger, because the Walker Cup has really become the benchmark of great venues. The last couple we've seen is the Old Course and at Seminole, and you look down the road, you've got Lahinch and Bandon and Chicago Golf and Pine Valley. Do you think it really matters both to the fans and the players what the actual stage is that the performance is on?
Well, I certainly do, and certainly in the case of Cypress Point, the first day they allowed spectators was Friday for a practice round, and I got to the golf course very early, about 7:30 in the morning, and the golf had not yet started. There were no golfers on the golf course. And there were people roaming the fairways, many people roaming the fairways, just taking pictures, just being on the grounds. I thought that was really impressive. And I confess that I don't follow the amateur game that closely, nor do I follow collegiate golf that closely. But when I started doing a little Walker Cup research, I started seeing the courses that are in the pipeline that you just mentioned that they will go to. And, you know, the USGA, with the rota of golf courses now they have for the U.S. Open, the Women's U.S. Open, they've greatly improved the venues they'll go to there. And with what's in store for the Walker Cup, I just think they're doing an outstanding job. And when I told every USGA guy I know that I saw there, I said, this is the coolest thing the USGA has ever done, period, in my opinion. I mean, it was just that good a weekend.
Roger, to hear you describe the weekend that was, to talk about the decorum, the golf course, the play, the fans, I detected some nostalgia, maybe some wistfulness in your description. Is there something you'd like to see the greater professional game or aspects of golf borrow from what happened this past weekend? Is it possible to take what happened at Cypress Point and transfer to other parts and portions of the game that we all love?
Well, I don't know if the latter part of that is possible. You know, it's hard getting the toothpaste back in the tube once it's out. Decorum around golf tournaments has changed. I'm not golf's conscience. I'm not someone who would say that is for the better or for the worse, but it is different. I think the Walker Cup, as I witnessed it this past weekend, is really what the Ryder Cup was intended to be in its inception. And it, of course, it's become very, very big and very vocal, and either side of the pond, it's changed complexion. There's no question about that. And I wish some of that would tone down. I wish there'd be a little bit more respect for the visiting team than is showed on either side. It gets a little carried away at times, and I think to the detriment of the event.
This was the fifth straight U.S. victory in the Walker Cup, Roger. It's starting to feel like the way the Ryder Cup did before Europe was introduced as part of that lineup in 1979. Is there a case to be made that the GB&I team ought to be broadened out to include Europe?
I think the case could be made. I don't know that it would fall on welcome ears by either GB&I or the U.S. They're a little slow to change. This is tradition. This is what it was intended to be. This is what it was founded to be. So I don't know that they would do that. I'd be kind of surprised if they did. As far as making a better competition, maybe so. And that's not to make light of the GB&I players. They're wonderful young men and players. And I saw a lot of terrific golf. But this last weekend went very much to form. What the pre-tournament thoughts were, that GB&I would be competitive and strong in foursomes. And when it came time to the singles, the strength and depth of the Americans would show up. And in fact, it did. It just went according to script.
Roger, there are great youngsters seemingly coming out of the woodwork in golf these days. What impressed you the most about 18-year-old Mason Howe, holing shots from hither and yon, winner of the U.S. Amateur and on his way to Georgia?
He's a kid. I mean, he's 18 in high school. I mean, to see the poise that they have and the way they have been taught, instructed the game, the way they have learned the decorum of the game is really impressive. Nathan Smith said it over and over, Captain Nathan Smith. You know, they're just a terrific young bunch of kids is what they are. And I watched some stuff where, you know, the game is played, even certainly at the professional level, far more aggressively than the players of my generation. And we'll say the ninth hole. It is a very short par four surrounded by sand dunes and brush. And the green is very sloped, high back left to the front right of the green. And we're in foursome play. Now it's alternate shot, right? And these guys are trying to drive it on the green. And if you don't hit the green, there's one place you can hit it where you're going to gain advantage. And it has to be an absolutely spectacular, wonderful golf shot. You start missing, there are hundreds of places you don't want to be. But there they are, and I lost them, saw them lose a couple of holes in a row when I was on that part of the course. And I thought, gee whiz, you know what? They need to learn a little bit more about playing golf. So in the singles match yesterday, I'm out with Ethan Fang, and they get up on that tee, and the hole is in the back left, which is hard to get to with a sand wedge from the fairway from a perfect lie. And he pulls out a wood, and I go on record. I say, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. Well, don't you know he hit it about 5 feet and got a conceded eagle? How he got a ball there, I'll never know. And I saw him later at the conclusion of the matches, and I said, thanks, you made me look really stupid. And I explained to him what happened. He got a chuckle out of it. But it's amazing the power these young guys have. It's amazing. They fear nothing. I was scared to death when I was on the tour as a rookie. But these kids now, they just play with an abandon that can only be respected and admired. And you stand there and watch it and just shake your head sometimes. But it is golf's going to be in good shape. We just had a weekend where we saw some future major champions. There's no two ways about it.
Well, these kids play a different game, but one thing we love is hearing Roger Maltby calling golf. This is Roger Maltby season. Great hearing you at Cypress. Have a great week in the Napa Valley, my friend.
Thanks, guys. Will do. Great talking to you.